evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 91 of the Weekly Wind Down. We are really excited to have our special guest with us tonight, Missouri Vaughn. She also goes by Paige Brodick. So we will get started. We're going to talk about Captain Marvel. We're going to do your listener questions. And we're going to talk about what we're watching and what we're obsessed with as usual. So I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacey, the political princess.
I'm Missouri Vaughn, a.k.a. Braddock.
All right. Paige is in a hotel, so we're going to do our best to try and keep the connection good. So it may be a little choppy at parts, but just bear with us and we'll figure out a way to get through it. All right. I am drinking a red blend. What a surprise.
Oh, shocking.
Oh, you know what? Shut up. You're drinking rosé. You can start talking shit when you're drinking something besides rosé. All right. I'm drinking Alamos. It's from Mendoza, Argentina. It's 2017. And the back reads, made primarily from Malbec, Argentina's signature red grape. The Alamos red blend displays deep, ripe flavors of blackberry and plum with layers of brown spice. I don't know if that's true, but it's pretty good. It says I'm supposed to like taste sunlight and snow melt in here, and I don't know if that's true, but
that's magical.
I know they make it sound like you're sipping on love, but I just it's good, but I don't know about all that. So I don't know if I taste I may taste sunshine by the end of the podcast, so I'll let you know.
I am drinking a wine I picked up at Costco. It's called Caricature. It's an old vine Zen, and I picked it out because there are some funny looking characters drawn on the front. And it says wines of character with great legs.
Oh,
so sold. I thought that was pretty funny. And I picked it up, and there was this lady in the aisle with me, and she goes, "I really just picked them for the labels." And I said, "Yeah, me too."
same girl.
Uh-huh. I knew it. So far, it's really good. It comes off as like a red blend. I like it a lot. I might go back and see if there's still some left.
Cool. Stacey, what mystery are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking the Yes Way Rosé. It's the Yes Way Brut Rosé. So it's a sparkling rosé. That's different. That's basically champagne. So if you're looking for like basic white girl champagne, search no more. Because this is like the perfect champagne for Ugg boots. And like infinity scarves, and it was
pumpkin really spice lattes.
And I will say, like, I reviewed their regular rosé. I think these are their only two like drink products by Yes Way Rosé. They sell it at Target. Not only is their label so cute, it's called Yes Way Rosé Bubbles on the front, which I think is super cute, and it has like pink bubbles going up the top. Their marketing, like their website, is very cute. I love it. The description on the back says Yes Way Brut Rosé. Yes Way Rosé with Bubbles, aka Bublé, is a beautiful and dry pink sparkling wine to enjoy at times that are celebratory or any day relay.
Oh no.
I want to work for their company. They're so fun.
I feel like you already kind of do.
I know. I'm probably keeping them in business. It's good though. It's not super dry. It's not sweet, which I appreciate. And so far, it's good. And I will say that I let Emily open this a couple days ago. And I haven't had any yet. So it's been open for a couple days. It's still really fresh and bubbly, and I really like it. Also, she had to open it because I'm afraid to open.
Yeah, I know. It's sparkling. Weird. You have.
She had a hard time with this one, too. It was hard to open.
Okay. Paige, what are you drinking?
I'm an epic fail on the wine front tonight because I'm drinking coffee.
Oh.
Because I'm on the West Coast. I'm on the West Coast and my day is not over.
All right. We'll allow it.
Coffee's good. It's like morning wine.
That's right.
All right. Okay, so why don't you tell us about your newest release and then the one you have coming out this summer?
Okay. The newest release, Spencer's Cove, is set on the blustery Northern Pacific California coast. It's about a mystery writer and a reclusive heiress who's kind of shy, whose family has a distant connection to witchcraft. And then there's a bunch of other secondary characters. It's kind of a little bit of an adventure story. And the next book I have coming out is called Chasing Sunset. It's a romance road trip story.
I like it.
Yeah. If you're looking for sunset, you can find it in Jackie's Wine.
I don't know yet. I haven't drank enough of it yet to claim that. Don't quote me yet. All right, so we got a few listener questions for you, so I'll go ahead and start. Lindsay wanted to know, what has been your favorite project to work on as Missouri, and what has been your favorite project to work on as Paige?
My favorite project to work on is Missouri. You know, I don't know how you feel about this since you're a writer, but I have a real soft spot for my very first book, All Things Rise. Because I think I put a lot of really personal stuff in there. And I guess my second favorite would be Love at Cooper's Creek, which also has like flavors of my experiences growing up in the South and stuff. So it's kind of a personal story too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then I think probably my longest running comic, Jane's World, is probably my favorite as Paige Braddock, the cartoonist.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I just, my first book that I ever wrote, Infiltration, was the first of a series. And then the final one's coming out next year. And it's a little bittersweet. I'm ready for it to be over, but it's sad. Like, what do they just, I don't know, the characters just stop talking to you? Do you just start to, like, I don't know. It's, I'm really torn about it. I'm excited for it to be over, but, it's hard. I mean, they're your first. You always love your first a little bit more.
I think so.
So the second question is a little bit long. It's from Megan. She says, I've read all your books and Spencer's Cove twice. Honestly, I picked it up because of the cover. It's breathtaking. I loved the characters and the progression of them, especially Abby. But my question is this. Is it possible that this will be the beginning of a series? Since the book turns out to not be at all what the reader expected, I was left hoping for more. Is there any way that will happen?
I would love to write a sequel to that book because one of the characters in it, Evan, she's sort of like one of the heroes of the story, and she doesn't get her full story, and you don't really know what her backstory is, and you don't know why she ended up there, and she sort of alludes to all of it, but I sort of ran out of room to tell that whole story. You know what's funny about that book is I like a surprise. I like to be surprised by a story, right?
Me too.
I don't like to hear everything in the synopsis. But I've seen some people post online that they were sort of surprised because at first I didn't mention the witchcraft element in the blurb about the book because I didn't want that to be the defining element about the story. And, but then the publisher had me go back and add that in because people were getting like really taken aback by the witchcraft element, even though I don't know. It's not a traditional paranormal story, right? So,
you don't want that to be the main. You don't want it to be people searching for witchcraft books solely,
right? Or because people who don't like that to like be turned off by it,
right? Because it's like I feel like I didn't set out to write a book about witches, and that people that like those kind of books might be really disappointed by this. This just was like it just happened to be where the story went, right? Yeah. Somebody did post on Goodreads. I love these reviews. Somebody gave it a 2-star review because they thought the book was really good, but they don't like witch stories. And so they gave it a 2-star review. And so then.
Gotta love Goodreads.
I know. Somebody sent me a note after that and said, I bought this book just because of that stupid 2-star review because they didn't like witches.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. People get real like married to the genre and they get real upset if it doesn't fit into like what they want out of the genre, but right. then they get upset if you've done the same thing that everybody else has done in the genre. So it's there's no pleasing them. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like if you're not surprised at the end of a book, what are you reading it for? Right. That's all I read.
That's what I think. I want to be swept away. I want to be like taken to a place I didn't expect to end up. Right. That's my goal.
I'd be bored otherwise.
Yeah, of course. Lucy wants to know, who is Nash Wiley in your life? Is she based on someone or is she an alter ego of sorts?
Nash Wiley is based on my misspent 20s in Central Florida.
That's very specific.
I have warned a few of my friends that are actually, the stories are based on them. Like the whole cocktail straw thing, that actually happened to a friend of mine, and she did have to go to the emergency room, and she did actually end up dating that woman for a year after the blood-soaked shirt, like, came clean kind of thing. But, I just had so many funny adventures when I was in my 20s, and we were all going out to clubs in Florida. Like, we would drive from Orlando down to Fort Lauderdale and Miami, where the club stayed open really late. And anyway, there needed to be some short stories based on those adventures. The whole Waffle House thing. Oh, my God.
I feel like no good comes from a Waffle House.
No, I know.
They only serve one purpose, and it's for 2 a.m. misguided adventures of your youth. Like, has anyone been to a Waffle House now that they're out of their 20s?
Nope.
No, of course you haven't. of course you haven't.
I ran into this friend of mine from college in Florida. We ran into each other at a club. First off, I didn't even know she was gay. And then we're like, oh, hey, man, we should catch up. We should go get some breakfast after the club closes, right? So we go, and I'm like asking her, what's she doing now? She said she was working as a secretary. And then all these Navy guys kept coming in to this Waffle House. It was actually, it wasn't a Waffle House, it was a Denny's. But I sort of changed the location because Waffle House is funnier. But she kept saying hi to all these guys. And I'm like, what is going on? And then they ended up joining us for breakfast. And by the end of it, we had like six or seven Navy guys sitting with us. Anyway, long story short, I found out later she was not a secretary. She was working as a stripper, and she knew all these guys from the club she worked at. And I was like, so that's where that whole scene from Waffle House comes from. It was inspired by her.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It was funnier at a Waffle House.
You can't make that shit up.
No. Okay, Kathy says, Proxima 5 is my go-to read. Really, I want to know all the things. Is this what you envision our future to be? Keegan originally claims Leah's property. I couldn't help but think of the feminist movement through the years. Was this supposed to be a nod to how far women have come, or did it mean something else? Do you intentionally make women slaves as a warning? Sorry, I've been dying to ask these questions since I've read it.
So that book and the concept of that book came out of my frustration with Trump winning the election and sort of this attack on science, attack on intellectual, any kind of anything perceived to be intellectual.
Anything above a third grade level? Yeah.
Yeah. It was sort of like the ethos right now in Washington is to only recognize one kind of power. And it's basically it embodies everything we tell kids not to be, right? If you're empathetic, you're weak. If you're smart, you're weak. So I was thinking to myself, okay, spin that out to some future civilization where all the disciplines survive except science, except this one spaceship, right? This one colony ship. What kind of culture would develop? And so what happened, of course, it became this military state, right? And that's what, and then you drop this scientist down in the middle of it who sort of shakes everything up. And Keegan realizes there's more than one way to be strong. There are many ways to be strong. You can be intellectually strong, you can be emotionally strong. So I would love to write a follow-up to that book that basically is about the revolution that happens when they take power, right? Because everything would be upended.
Interesting.
We need that to happen really now. Right.
That'd be like our perfect fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Or that he just likes chokes on a Big Mac. That would be cool too. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I would take that. Either way.
So this next
Revolution
one...
or fast food. Whatever.
Whatever's quicker.
This next one is from Valerie, and it's not actually a question. It says, this is more of a thank you for Jane's World. Excuse me. I was 20 years old in 2003 when I first stumbled upon Jane. I was struggling with my sexuality and trying desperately to navigate my way through my religious and oppressive family. It's odd to say that a comic changed your life, but it did. Jane's sexuality just simply existed. It wasn't the most interesting thing about her, and it gave me a sense of normalcy that probably saved my life. On our 10th anniversary, my wife gave me a signed Jane's World comic, and it is my favorite possession. It sits on display in my office as a reminder that things get better and we're not alone. I just wanted you to know how valued your work is and how much it means. Thank you.
That was really sweet.
Yeah. That was from Valerie.
There's some funny jokes in there where Jane, I think they're funny, where Jane's always like, her friends are always like, can you be defined by your sexuality if you don't actually have a sex life? Like, cause she's always like having trouble dating. Right. So
girl, same.
Yeah. Well, if she would have just gotten with Dorothy from the beginning, she wouldn't have had that problem.
I know. Best laid plans. You know, what's interesting is I come from a very conservative background. It took me a long time to sort of find my way. And so maybe some of that comes out in Jane's World that people can identify with, you know?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, you had a pretty big impact on her.
That's rewarding when you hear that kind of stuff, that something you did makes somebody feel good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, so Olivia wants to know what your first day working at Peanuts was like.
I went to work at Peanuts after having worked in journalism for about 12 years. So I was used to being, I had come from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is the newsroom at the time had about 600 people in it. So it's chaos, right? There's
crazy.
Tons of stuff going on all the time. Everybody's talking. Everybody's interrupting everybody. There's like, you know, flurries of activity leading up to deadlines. So then I get to the studio where Mr. Schultz worked, and it was like me and him and a secretary and one other person, and it was like crickets. It was so quiet. That was the first thing that freaked me out. The second thing was I was like, is this for real? Like, at any moment somebody's gonna figure out I'm a total imposter, that maybe I've totally forgotten how to even draw, and here I am studio, right? In all seriousness, though, I like the first day I drove in there and I saw his car in the driveway, my stomach just did like it nosedived, just because he had been my hero since I was a kid, and then to be at that studio, it was a little overwhelming, frankly.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But how cool is that?
What was the most surprising thing about working that you didn't expect?
I feel like the surprising thing was how normal he was in so many ways. He was just a cartoonist, right? We would sit on Monday mornings, we'd sit and have a cup of coffee and talk about different comic strips, and he'd talk about what he drew over the weekend. And it was sort of like after a little while, you'd forget, like, he's this super famous person, right?
I don't know what's happening. Sorry.
Is that me?
No.
It could be me. I'm so, like, low-tech.
No, it was me. I'm sorry.
Anyway, you know how you, like, you have these heroes in your life, and sometimes you're afraid to meet them because they're not going to measure up to who you think they are, right? Mm-hmm. And he was exactly the kind of person you would hope the person that drew Peanuts would be. The person that created Snoopy, right? He was really a sweet guy.
That's that makes me really cool so to hear. Yeah. Especially my wife is a little bit obsessed with, we have two Basset hounds and we have so much Peanut stuff all over the house. And I was like, do you have anything you want me to ask her? And she's like, yes. And I was like, well, okay, tell me. No. And I was like, well, what do you want me to ask her? I mean, we have dog bowls and shower curtains. It's ridiculous. So
I should put you on I can send you some swag. We get so many samples of product and stuff.
Please don't. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, she listens to this, she'll hate me. Yeah, no, that'd be great. So cool. Go ahead, Stace.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were next. Christy says, what is your biggest professional regret?
Whoa, that's a heavy one.
That's deep.
You know, in terms of, I think probably in terms of Jane's World, I told Allison Bechtel once that I wish I had been as brave as she was earlier in my career. I think I had, because of my childhood in the Deep South and, you know, everything that comes with that, probably a lot of internalized homophobia I didn't even know I had, right? That I had to sort of break through. I wish I had been more brave, and I wish I'd started Jane's World sooner and been a little more out sooner, you know? Looking back, it's like I wish I could get like the first 10 years back, you know, and do that better, right?
Yeah. That makes sense. I'm sure a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah. Patty wants to know what your inspiration was for Whiskey Sunrise.
Mm-hmm. Whiskey Sunrise, my great-great-grandfather was a moonshiner and a Church of God minister in North Georgia.
That tracks.
That is a combo.
Yeah, and he saw no complications living those dual lives, which I like about him. So I had all these, a lot of the stories in that, a lot of the setting and the stories and things that happened are all just from family stories from back in the day. A lot of the religious stuff that happens between Lovey and her father, who's a minister, are based on conversations I had with my mom when I came out, and we would talk about just her trying to reconcile like her beliefs with who her daughter was. So actually that's the only one of my Bulstrokes books that my mom has read.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I thought it would be kind of meaningful for her to read it since so much of it came out of our struggle with each other. And she actually really liked it.
Oh, she's secretly reading all of them.
No, I hope not. I actually did. I gave her a PDF of that one, and I edited out all the sex scenes. I just gave her the rest of the book. And it fades to black every time, you know, something happens. So
yeah. It makes me real nervous. My mom reads all my books because she's actually a really talented editor. Like, she's really good at, everyone who listens to this knows commas kick my ass. Like, if there's any grammar that's really I struggle with, it's the placement of commas. And my mom's really talented at it. And every time I send it to her, I'm always like, fuck. God damn it. I wish she just, especially if she sends me back like corrections in those areas, I'm like, oh God, I'm sorry. But you know what? If you don't want to read it, don't read it. I don't know.
She's not under any false pretenses that you don't know what sex is.
You know what though? Even if I was straight, I don't know if I'd want my mom reading like sex scenes that I wrote. Like, it's just awkward all the way around.
It's too much.
Right.
It's too much information. Yeah.
It's like when you're a kid and you're watching TV with your parents and a sex scene comes on and everyone's just kind of like, what's
you just want to die. Yeah, I want the couch to swallow me whole.
I forgot you guys can see what I'm doing. I'm like waving at my wife, trying to get her to come say hi, but she didn't see me. And you're like, what is she waving at?
No, we have all kinds of stuff going on around here. Hi.
Hi. This is my wife, Evelyn.
Hello. How's it going, Evelyn? So it was your mom, like, did it take her a long time to come around or was it kind of instant for her?
Oh no, it took, I would say 10 years probably.
Really?
We had a hard time, and but we ended up in such a great place. I think because we didn't we made ourselves deal with it. We didn't like sort of take the easy route, you know? So we're in a really good place now.
Good. It's really good.
My dad still struggles. He's old school, you know, and he's like, doesn't really know the right words to use and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's kind of funny, actually. He'll try to like say, like, some lesbian couple moved in to their community. He's like, yeah, she's got a partner, you know, like a partner, like, not like a business partner, but like a partner. Yeah. I'm like trying to figure out how to say it. It's pretty funny.
Hey, at least he makes the effort.
I appreciate the effort.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard for parents. Like, my mom she's very support. She has two daughters. Both of them turn out to be gay. Sorry, Mom. But I think they go after I've talked to her about it, because she's completely okay now with our sexuality. She loves our, you know, she loves my wife. She loves whoever my sister's dating at the time.
You started to say our, I was like, our what?
I self-corrected. But I think for most parents, they go through like this period of mourning. And not that it's as extreme as like their child dying, but kind of the, how my mom explained it to me was kind of the aspirations that they had when they give birth to this little girl. Like, you know, they picture this wedding and a man standing down at the end of the aisle and like, you know, them giving birth and all that stuff can still, you know, giving birth can still happen. You could still get married, like all those things. But I think it kind of erases like the however many years that they thought they knew what to expect from you, and it changes. And I know I'm one of the lucky people that their parents are, they're okay with it now, but I do think it, they do go through kind of this period of mourning, and it sucks because you want to be just be like, I'm still the same person that you raised. Like, I still have dumb jokes and like, I still say shit I shouldn't in front of people that I shouldn't. And like, I still do all those things. I'm not any different, you know, but I don't know. I think it's harder for them. And I hope this next generation changes that. They seem to be.
Yeah. My mom said the same thing, that I had to give her time to like, let go of this version of my life that she had, right? That she was kind of mourning the loss of that. Mm-hmm. So I get it. It's just, yeah, it's what you're saying.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But I feel like I have two daughters. I feel like I would almost be more sad if they didn't find somebody to spend their life with. You know, like, I don't think that I have this version in my head of marrying, you know, them to a man and being there and seeing this life and babies and just very traditional. I think that way. I wouldn't care if one of them turned out to be gay. It wouldn't bother me. I think I'd be more sad if they just never married and never found somebody to spend their life with. That would make me like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'd rather see you with somebody that you love, whoever right. it is.
Whoever that is, yeah.
My mom actually said, I actually tried, I don't know if I've ever told this story on here before, but I actually tried coming out when I was like 14 years old to her. I was either 14 or 15. And I went into her bedroom and I told her that I think I'm gay. And her immediate response, and this was in 96, 97. Her immediate response was, no, you're not. Like, I don't want to hear that. Like, just, you know, and me being the people pleaser that I am, just said, okay. My sister at 14 or 15 said, I'm gay. Mom said, no, you're not. She was like, fuck you. I am. Like, I don't care what you say. And went about her business of bringing, you know, random girls home. But I
know.
No, I sucked it up and I stayed in the closet for, you know, another 10 years. And my mom says now that that's one of the biggest regrets of her life, because she feels like she played a part in making me be someone that I wasn't then for another decade, and doing things that I didn't want to do, to please her, please society. So at least she kind of sees it now as, you know, I've told her, you know, you do the best you can. You know,
right.
My mom never intentionally hurt me. Like, she just reacted based on her feelings at the moment. But I think I give her credit for looking back now and wishing things had been different. That's why I think, like, you know, we're all raising kids that, kind of like Valerie said, their sexuality should be the least interesting thing about them. Like,
exactly.
Who cares? But that's easy for us to say. We're not kids growing up in Kentucky with, you know, really restrictive parents.
I think that's a really important thing about that she had to say, was that, you know, appreciating that in a character, because I think that's important when the plot doesn't necessarily revolve around the fact that, you know, of that character's sexuality. I think that's huge, that is not the most important thing or the most interesting thing about them.
Yeah. It did mean that I had probably more straight readers than other cartoonists who were doing a lesbian lead. And I would always get these emails from these guys saying, you know, like, that James World sort of opened their eyes a little bit, or gave them an entry point into this sort of world that they had no experience with, just because the characters weren't, because it wasn't necessarily about each character's sexuality. It was just about a group of friends who were not really great at figuring life out, right? Mm-hmm. Like most of us in our 20s.
Yeah.
So speaking of moms, my mom told me, she texted me and says, can you please tell her my mom is a lifelong Peanuts fan. She's so happy to learn that Charles Schulz's work continues. And do you have a favorite character, and do you identify with a character?
That's a good question.
My favorite character is Snoopy, because I love dogs, and because he's not sort of tethered to the fact that he's a dog. He can do anything in his own mind, right? In terms of characters probably that I'm maybe identify with the most, it's probably Linus. He's sort of the philosophical theologian of the group.
Totally. Yeah.
I'm a Linus fan too.
Yeah.
I think he's underappreciated personally. Yeah. All right. So we are going to move on to our next topic. Captain Marvel came out, and for grown women, little tiny human women, even little boys, I personally think it's really important for little boys and little girls to see that a superhero isn't defined by their gender. And, you know, Captain Marvel just may save all the Avengers. And, right. Yeah. So, it's getting a lot of good press. I've heard nothing but good things about it. I actually, unfortunately, haven't seen it yet because I have an 8-month old that doesn't let us do anything, but, what I wanted to focus on this week instead of, not just the good press, but kind of the inevitable backlash of the toxic portion of the patriarchy. And before we get into this, I do want to say this has been, I'm not bashing all men with this. It's been really well received by men too, and little boys. And that's fantastic. But I think this kind of backlash is inevitable. And I just wanted to talk about it because I think it's important to kind of address these issues. For one, because I don't like when this kind of negativity gets into people's heads and tries to undo a really amazing and wonderful thing that women are entering the superhero universe. And two, you don't get to take shit away from her, all right? Just because she blew up all the box offices and she's a chick doesn't mean that you get to go on one of your bullshit rants and try to unravel her. So I'm going to take the 2 minutes and actually read this article so that our listeners, not because I want to give this guy press, but I want them to understand what we're discussing when we actually talk about the backlash of this. So this guy named Greg Morse, and you can forget his name immediately. he gave his very needed male perspective of Captain Marvel. And I should say that this comes from a Christian website. So it's not, take that for what you will. But he said the most recent Marvel thriller, Captain Marvel, cannot be accused of hiding its uniform. In the lead actress's own words, its mythology, its story, and it's the human experience on this large scale. And on top of it, they said parentheses, directors and powers that be at Disney wanted to make like the biggest feminist movie of all time. Written by women, led by women, Captain Marvel hoped to be for women what Black Panther was for the Black community. So who is Captain Marvel? The evolution of Carol Danvers into the mighty warrior was progressive. In the original comics released in 1968, Captain Marvel was a male alien with the name Mar-Vell, and Miss Danvers, a former Air Force officer, was girlfriend to the hero. As the feminist movement of the 70s advanced, so did her prominence. She soon became a superheroine known as Miss Marvel, Miss, in honor of Gloria Steinem. According to its writer, Miss Marvel was a feminist role model. She eventually became Captain Marvel in the 2012 rendition of the comic. The movie follows her journey of self-discovery after suffering from memory loss. She finds herself on an unfamiliar planet and must regain her identity as woman and heroine. The character, in the words of Kevin Feige, president of Marvel Studios, had been held back much of her life from being able to pursue the kinds of things she wanted to pursue. She's constantly being told, girl shouldn't do that, or it's too dangerous for you, you'll get hurt. This film is very much about the character learning to not hold back and to not accept the boundaries put in front of her. So far, so good. Like, yeah, right? Cool. I'm on board. Yeah. I know. As fate from the Marvel Universe hangs in the balance, this long-awaited female savior and protector steps forth to face the seemingly unstoppable Thanos. In a world of the all-but-defeated Avengers, compromised of gods, warriors, kings, and assassins, we wait for Captain Marvel to save the world from the enemy whom the likes of Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther, Spider-Man, and the Hulk could not defeat collectively. According to the president, we have reached the era of Captain Marvel, the new face of the Avengers, who is the most powerful character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. However, to become the hope of the Marvel Universe, she must first break free from all that limits her. So Danvers' statement is, I do not blame Marvel for inserting the trending feminist agenda into the universe. Where else can this lucrative ideology, which contrasts so unapologetically with reality, go be substantiated? If not to an alternate universe. Verse after verse, story after story, fact after fact, study after study, example after example, okay, we get it, dude, dispels the myth that sameness between the sexes. The alternative universe where the accident infuses the heroine with superhuman power, however, seems to stand as a reasonable apologetic for the feminist agenda. So did the movie live up to the hype? Did it come close to being the biggest feminist movie ever? The Uncle Tom's Cabin of the movement. Squint as I might, tread into douchey territory. Squint as I might, I can't imagine how it did. The film was not the worst movie I've seen, but it stood galaxies away from the best. Maybe suitable for Redbox.
This guy sucks.
So, as I consider Disney's new depiction of femininity in Captain Marvel, I cannot help but mourn. How far we've come since the days when we sought to protect and cherish our women. The great drumroll of the previous Avenger movies led to this, a woman protecting men and saving the world. The mightiest of all Avengers indeed, after whom they are named, is the armed princess turned feminist queen who comes down from the tower to do what Prince Charming could not. Am I nitpicking? It is a movie after all. I wish it were. Instead of engaging the movie ideology as mere fiction, a fun escape into another world, we have allowed it to bear deadly fruit on Earth. Along with Disney, we abandon the traditional princess's vibe and seek to empower little girls everywhere to be strong like men. Cinderella trades her glass slipper in for combat boots. Belle, her books for bazookas. Does the insanity bother us anymore? The ideology that sends Brie Larson soaring fictionally around outer space has sent her, our real daughters, mothers, and sisters, devoid of such superpowers, to war, to serve and die in the place of men. Real wars, the kind where horribly smashed men still move like half-crushed beetles. Real wars, like C.S. Lewis elsewhere describes, as the Armageddon of every temporal evil. We ought to lament that feminist lust cannot be appeased even with blood. It takes its daughters, and now calling men's bluff advocates for sending its mothers into the flames. Unquestionably, men ought support women's desire to be affirmed, respected, and honored. But indeed, few actions display our resolve to honor our women more than excluding them from the carnage of the battlefield. Where can we more clearly display our ultimate resolve to love our women as queens than to step into hell on earth as sacrifice pawns in their defense? Generation after generation has mobilized its men to be devoured, that its women might not be. Yet the feminist agenda does not condone this exclusion. It will not be patronized by any messages of you can't, you won't, or you shouldn't. Even when we say you can't go into the lion's den for us, you won't risk a brutal death to protect us, you shouldn't expose yourself to the bullets bearing our name, even then, the deprivation still causes offense. But our God, our nature, our love must firmly say, you are too precious, my mother, my daughter, my beloved. It is the glory to die so you may live. Miss Marvel may be on the verge of ruining a movie long decade saga with identity politics. Will we fuss more about that than the government sending our daughter stripped of photon blasts and the ability to fly to fight our wars? Will we be attuned enough to know how shameful it is for men to hide behind their women, hoping she will take down Goliath? Have we forgotten how precious women are? Have we forgotten that it is our glory to die in their place? God's story for all eternity consists of a son who slew a dragon to save a bride. Jesus did not put his women forward, and neither should we. where Adam failed, Jesus succeeded. He is God. He is the good shepherd who laid down his life for his people. Even from the cross, God's wrath crushing him, he saw to the welfare of his mother. Should we so cowardly send our women to protect our children and us? Protecting our women with our very lives is not about their contumacy. It's about their value.
Okay. Worse than Thanos. Like, these are not your women. You are not sending them anywhere. Like, that's my thought.
You know, it's sort of like if you wind back the whole thing, the whole argument that he's making, the reason that we have sort of this conflict-driven society is because I feel like men have been in positions of power and decision making for almost the entire run of history, right? So what if the paradigm were different and the whole globe was based on a matriarchy? Would we have wars? I mean, I'm sure we'd have skirmishes, but wouldn't we
we'd hold a fucking grudge, I'll tell you that. Yeah. We still wouldn't be talking to Russia. Fuck them.
You'd probably be in a better spot than we are now.
I don't know. His whole argument assumes that the world can only be one way.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say. Right? Yeah, from the very beginning. That way has been right from the very beginning. It's right now. It's the way it should have been all along. I don't know.
Well, even just to say that, you know, about women being strong like men, like, only men can be strong? Like, fuck you, bro. No. You create a life with your body and then push a baby out of your vagina and we'll talk about being strong. Like, you don't know what people can do. That just irritates me. Like, being strong should not be synonymous with being masculine. Like, get out of here.
Also, it's a superhero fantasy movie. I mean, I don't know any guys that are as strong as Superman, but it doesn't mean I'm going to take down every guy I know and say that they're trying to live up to this unrealistic expectation because I like Superman, right?
Yeah. Why can't this guy fly?
Right.
What loser is he?
It's not allowing women to have the same sort of fantasy world that they could be this powerful being, right? Like, women should have that character to look up to in entertainment as a fantasy, right?
That's the thing that gets me, is because there's this like inherent, like, obviously women aren't as strong as men, and now you can, like, so they couldn't in this fantasy world even equate to that either. Like, get out of here.
Right.
It's like, if we, like, I'd be willing to trade this guy if we're so worried about like immigration. I vote that we start a new thing that, like, when we reach our like capacity, then we can trade like good immigrants for pieces of shit like this guy, send him somewhere else.
Well,
like,
part of it, everything that this, and I believe that this individual, and I'm trying to practice better of giving people the benefit of the doubt, so I'm gonna exercise that here. I think this stems from fear. And there's no better motivator than fear and hatred in people. It often eclipses love and compassion. And I think what this man is afraid of is, look, for all of the good men out there, women's voices have been completely snuffed out for generations. I mean, it wasn't even until the 1970s where women could get a credit card without their husband or father's approval. So you're kind of seeing this third wave of feminism take over, where women are not only listened to and believed, they hold positions of power and authority. And now, not just that, they're also taking over the superhero world, which was kind of like the last really masculine area on, I mean, never mind 007 and Mission Impossible and like all these things that are hyper masculine, like kill everyone you want and get to sleep with the hot girl. Like, the fact that they're now interchanging women to not only be equals to men as far as superpowers go, we're talking about Captain Marvel could potentially save all of it. Like, the whole balance of the, like, the universe hangs on her ability to do what in Superworld land she was kind of destined to do. And I actually think if he were to step off of his fear latent pedestal for a minute, it's actually kind of beautiful. as if you are looking at it from Christian terms, because what can you conquer better than Mother Earth? And that is kind of what, you know, this whole like princess coming in to be like, look, you guys fucked this up. I'm gonna go ahead and save you. But there's not gonna be a sequel because we're not doing this fucking 8 times. Like, right. You know what? I
think this is all while she's on her period. You know, he obviously missed the whole Sermon on the Mount where Christ said that the meek would inherit the earth, right? Or those perceived to be weak will be strong, right? That's what Christ was trying to do is get people to look. He was trying to upend the paradigm and get people to think about it differently, you know? I love to get into theological debates with people. I try not to do it. It's not good for your anxiety level, whatever, your stress level.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that kind of took me aback in this article was the whole like how he kind of, you know, put on this pedestal the idea of Sleeping Beauty and Snow White. That is not a good idea of feminist. That's not what you're going to raise your, that's not what I would want to raise my daughter to be. And it's not who I want to raise my son to admire. These women for their stories. And I'm not hating on like Disney. Sleeping Beauty and Snow White are great. I don't care. Like, but the idea that they kind of take this back seat in their own destiny, it's kind of unfair. And to say that like Belle wouldn't be like throw Belle's books away. I think books is what makes Belle powerful in the entire essence of Belle's story. Right. He's so overtly missing the point of what actual power, true power is the power to influence, not through guns and bloodshed, but through motivation and words and trust and loyalty. Like this whole idea that we can't send women into war because we should be protecting them is at the very best condescending and at the very worst so out of touch with the current state of what's going on in the world. And this, and it especially irritates me that he tries to hang all of these ideals on the foot of Jesus and his Christianity and stuff. Because this dude is right here why people are leaving the church is because you are trying to say now that women don't get a say, just like they don't get a say in what they do with their bodies. You're trying to say that they don't get a say in where and when they fight for what they believe in. And Stacey and I both served in the military. And I'll tell you what. I've met just as many dumb boys in the military. Let me tell you, some of them could not save the world. I'm going to just put it out there. Like we're all going to be real fucked if it hangs in the balance of some of the airmen that I worked with. I'm just saying, and it didn't matter if they had a penis or a vagina. It's this whole idea that, oh, men are designed to take bullets for women. No, they're not. Is that really all of what you see in your own gender? Is that really all of what you see in women? We don't need to be protected. We can protect ourselves. You can appreciate, admire, respect us, but you don't need to cradle us and treat us like a flower. And this is exactly where toxic masculinity comes into play in everyday thinking. And I just hope that little girls aren't reading this and thinking twice just because he hung it on this little hook that he tried to label as religious beliefs. Like, I just hope that's not a thing.
It's kind of like what I said about my whole thing with Proxima 5 was discovering that there are other ways to be strong, right? That's his problem, that he's only seeing strength one as a singular event, a singular path, right? So
sometimes strength is someone threatening violence and finding another way out of it. Sometimes strength is being the bigger person, walking away from a situation because the only thing that hurt is your pride. Like, strength is not always in blood and bullets and fires and mass destruction. It's just not
that sort of like misnomer of strength, right?
It's because men have ruled the world for far too long. You guys are done. You fucked it up. Hand over the keys.
Right, we are taking charge.
Yeah, I mean, can we make it any worse? Probably not. Stace, what do you think?
I'm enjoying listening. All the things. Okay, listen. Number one, I think he's saying that like women are not strong enough and not equal, but he's hiding behind saying, but it's because you guys are on a pedestal. It's because I want to protect you. It's not because I think that you can't do it. I just want to protect you so you can go do better things. Like, no. I think he's hiding behind it. Number two, if Cinderella trades in her glass slippers for combat boots, maybe my kids will watch Cinderella because they're much more interested in Mulan because that's right? such a better story. You know, they truly would put on Mulan over Cinderella. Number three, this line that he says about, so we will fuss more about this than the government sending our daughters stripped of photon blasts and the ability to fly to fight our wars. That irked me real bad because it's almost like, so our daughters are going to watch this movie and be like, I want to go fight wars now. And they're going to go.
Because
and
I can fly.
Be like, wait, I can't fly? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Please. Yeah. Bro. Yeah. I'm at a comic convention right now on the West Coast. I'm at Emerald City Comic Con, and it came up, Captain Marvel came up on the panel we were on today, and it was all women on this panel, and they were talking about scenes that sort of choked them up and made them realize they had not seen themselves reflected in some of these big movies before. And two scenes came to mind. One scene was in Wonder Woman, where that scene where she throws off the cloak and climbs out of the trench and runs toward the enemy lines, and you're just like, and you're in the theater, you're going, holy shit, yes, this is amazing, right? And she's so powerful, and she doesn't wait on the guys, and she's tired of being told no, and she's like taking her destiny, you know, and like running with it. And then the other scene was in Captain Marvel, where they're trying to make her think that her only power, and this is where this guy really missed it. He really didn't follow the plot. But the aliens are trying to make her think that her only power are her superpowers, right? But she's reflecting back to when she was human and when she was a little girl and all the times that she got knocked down, that she stood up. And in every one of those instances, she had no superpowers but her own will, right? So when she fell down on the baseball field, she got up. When she wrecked the bike, she got up. There's this like sequence of her as a kid and through her life falling. When she's in basic training, she falls and she gets up. And every time she did that, she was no more than a human female person, but epically strong without the superpower. Like that movie, that's the pivotal moment in the movie. And if you don't tear up at that scene, man, then you just didn't get the movie, right? So he totally misses that mark, because that's really the message to little girls and to women, that like, I have nothing to prove to you. I have only things to prove to myself, and I'm standing up. I mean, that's like, it's like, whoa. It was great. That was my favorite part of the movie.
Well, especially when
spoiler alert for you, since you haven't seen it. Sorry.
I'm actually waiting for 2 weeks. I'm going to see it in 2 weeks. But okay. I think it always comes glaringly obvious, because there's a little bit of pushback about, you know, Wonder Woman, but the DC universe hasn't built up. I'm a huge comic book person, and I'm not loyal to Marvel or DC. I like them both for different reasons, but that there wasn't as much backlash about Wonder Woman because DC hasn't done as good of a job as Marvel has as building up their universe and stuff. Yes, Batman is legendary. Superman is legendary. But as far as building like a team, the Justice League, they haven't done quite as good of a job as far as movie making goes. But I think what this is making glaringly obvious is, one, there's not enough representation of women in these circumstances, because people are so taken aback by, like, hey, I'd watch an entire movie of the women of Wakanda, to be perfectly honest. Like, put me down for three of those. I will go see it over and over and over again. And two, it's another instance, and believe me, I'm raising a little boy, and I'm going to try, like, we read him books about, you know, women who've changed the world and stuff. There's just not enough representation of strong women in the media. So when things like this come out, guys, stop feeling so fucking threatened by it. Like, just relax, enjoy it.
Just one movie.
It's nice to look at her. Sit back and relax. Yeah, sit back and relax and enjoy the show. She's pretty. Like, she's blonde hair, blue eye. Like, what more do you want? Imagine if they made her African American. You guys would have lost your shit. Like, just chill out.
But I feel like on the opposite end of that, the whole thing, I mean, we barely touched on toxic masculinity, right? In the end, he says, should we so cowardly send our women to protect our children and us? Protecting our women with our very lives is not about their competency, but their value. Okay, so just imagine sitting your son down and my daughter's down on the couch and saying, you guys can't go to war, but you can because you need to protect them. It's not that they can't do it, but their value is more than yours. So you go be that bullet sponge for them. What are we telling little boys in that? You know what I mean? That's disgusting.
For sure.
Our boys are equal to our girls, just like our girls are equal to our boys.
I completely agree. Yeah. I think you're totally right, though, Stacey. Like, I want my son to grow up thinking that, I'm just as important as, and I'm not saying that I don't want him to grow up and want to protect his significant other, or if he has children, his children, because I think those are instinctual. Like, I don't think that's isolated to men. I think women want to protect their, women want to protect their spouses. Women want to protect their children. I think part of this goes back to toxic masculinity, like you were saying, and stroking men's egos to saying the only way you can protect those you love is through violence. Mm-hmm, and it's not. It's and not. That
there's only one way to be strong.
It's teaching them that there are other ways to be strong. Sometimes the strongest thing you can do is walking away from a situation where no one's going to win and only people are going to get hurt. And your pride may be a little bit bruised, but everyone's going to be better off for it. And I know that's like a feminine kind of response of like, I'm just not going to fight you on this. But I don't think it is at all. I think that's the response of like a strong, logical person who's like. Right.
Sometimes that's the smart thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So this dude can fuck all the way off.
Yeah.
You can take several seats. In conclusion, take several seats. You
are formally invited.
To fuck all the way off. Yeah. I sometimes wonder, though, when guys like this post articles like this, what do their wives think? Like, what do their daughters think? Like, that whole Trevor Carlson thing.
Brave.
That when that whole Trevor Tucker Carlson thing, Trevor Carlson, that's a kid who used to work for us. Sorry, Trevor. When that whole Tucker Carlson thing came out and he was saying how primitive women are and how simple they are and how, you know, child marriage is okay as long as it's because his lifestyle is different. I thought, Jesus, man, you have three daughters.
Gross.
Would you be okay with them at like 15, 16 being married off to an almost 30-year-old? We could go down a whole pipeline from this.
So gross.
Yeah. You're broken, bro. All right.
Yeah.
What's everyone watching this week?
Oh my gosh. I took your guys's word on the last podcast and I watched the Michael Jackson documentary.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
4 hours plus half of the Oprah thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I dove in head first. It was not what I expected. If we're saying yay or nay, if we're supposed to recommend it or not. I went into it thinking that it was going to be just a bunch of kids that had visited Neverland saying, oh, Michael Jackson touched me. And I'm going to go, I don't believe you. I might believe you. I don't believe you. It's not. It was following two men's entire lives from 7 to 35, and they had a lot of documentation, and it changed my thoughts on the word abuse, sexual abuse. Yeah. I mean, it made me think about things differently, so I highly recommend it. I know a lot of people are saying they don't want to watch it because it's graphic. It's no more graphic, I feel like, than watching an episode of Law & Order SVU. If you can get through that, you can get through this because it's worth it. And I think it will change a lot of people's minds that say, why didn't they come forward earlier? Or where is their physical proof? Or this and that. If you feel like you can't decide if it's true or not, watch this and then.
And these men deserve to be heard.
Yes. Same. I watched Leaving Neverland because when we on the last podcast, I had only watched the Oprah special. But yeah, I watched all 4 hours of it, and it just there's no way you can watch this and say that this didn't happen. Those men were obviously traumatized, and I think everybody should watch it, and then we should all just agree that yeah, like his songs are great, but
Michael Jackson's canceled.
Right. He's canceled.
Well, that's what I was saying because my wife Evelyn really wants to watch it, and I was like, oh my God, what are we gonna do with that information? Because how can you still like his music and be a fan knowing these things about him, right?
Well, but you know what changed my mind about that a little bit was the Oprah special where she said like he can have great music and have done these horrible things and both things can be true at the same time. Can have done wonderful things for a lot of people and have also done these horrible things, because that's the thing that I think is so disturbing, even more so than the sort of graphic details that they give, is how much love they have still in their voices and stuff when they talk about him. It's really, really sad.
Sorry. It was hard to get through. I only finished it because I felt that these men deserve to be heard. But as much as I like Michael Jackson's music, never again, because he... Mm-hmm. I will not give a dime to anything that he is. It's the way he preyed on these boys, and he could have been, I know he was sick and all these things, but he, no.
It might explain it, but it doesn't excuse it.
He's canceled in my life as far as I'm concerned. Yep. Cause
Michael Jackson's over.
Yeah. For me. I can't make anyone do anything, but for me, he's over. Like, I could never listen to another one of his songs in good conscience and feel good about it or, like, happy about it. And did he change the music industry? Of course. Did he change? Would we even have, you know, half of the artists that we have, Justin Timberlake, The Weeknd, like, all of these people are completely influenced by Michael Jackson, and that's okay. I cannot participate in listening to his music anymore.
But I would 100% trade that. And those people in their careers for what happened to those little boys.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
What I watched this, I actually watched it this evening, and it was a recommendation from Cassie, was the documentary Transformer. And it's about a bodybuilder named Matt who was ranked in the country. He was number one, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he had been struggling with the fact that he was transgender for his entire life. And his process of coming to grips with that and witnessing how it kind of went down and the hits he's taken professionally, personally, it was very, very worth it. Janelle is who she goes by now, is a phenomenal person. She has the patience of a saint, like most transgender people do, like most trans, because they have to tolerate a lot of ignorance and a lot of questions and a lot of blatant bigotry. I will say this. She's also raising 3 sons who are some of the most phenomenal individuals you will ever witness on TV. They're teenagers, nonetheless. Like, they're 16, 14, and like 12. And these kids and their support of their father, who, you know, identifies as female, he did something right. She did something right. Like, it's really, really good. It's about an hour and a half, and seeing her kind of struggle with coming out to her parents, and her mom kind of sees her as Janelle for the first time, and the fact that her dad won't accept her, and, you know, she's fired from her job, and like, she goes through these surgeries, and it was really good. And a really good reminder that there are people out there that struggle with this type of thing every single day. And, you know, with all the political news and stuff that goes on in our day-to-day lives, we kind of forget the portion of people that are living with something really real on a constant basis, and, you know, really struggling with their own identities. And what was the most interesting about this individual was, you're talking about a hyper masculine profession such as powerlifting, and how she kind of comes to grips with letting that part of her life go, kind of like Caitlyn Jenner and letting go of the idea of being an Olympian, but she's not as douchey. She didn't vote for Trump, I assume. But seeing like a real person that you can actually identify with and being like, God damn, man, that's a rough road that you have to go down. And I wish people who were anti-trans would watch stories like this, because there's no way you can watch her speak and think that it was a choice for her. She didn't choose this. She has fought this her whole life, and it has been a constant struggle, and it's phenomenal. So it's called Transformer. She now goes by Janae. She was formerly Matt. And it's definitely worth your hour and 20 minutes. Paige, what are you watching?
I just watched a documentary called The Dawn Wall, like D-A-W-N Wall. And it's about a climber who climbed in Yosemite. But Evelyn had heard the story about these guys. There was a group of climbers. They were captured by rebels in like Kazakhstan. It wasn't Kazakhstan. Somewhere like that, right? Where there's like military uprising, and they were fired at while they were climbing and like were captured. It was a woman. There was like four people. Yeah, four people climbing together. One woman, three guys. Anyway, it's a great documentary because it's not just about it's kind of coming back from this trauma in your life and how it affected the couple, the guy and the girl, and then the guy that's the main focus of the piece, Tommy Caldwell, is just such a great person. Like, talking about toxic masculinity, he's the opposite of that. His empathy for fellow climbers and his sacrifice for his friends, and I don't know, I recommend it. It was great, and it was awe-inspiring, and the scenery's gorgeous, and it was an all-around good documentary. It's called The Dawn Wall. Because it's the part of El Capitan who gets the sunrise first. That's why they call it The Dawn Wall. So there's this great footage of it, yeah.
What are you guys obsessed with this week?
My oldest daughter was in the play Mamma Mia at the high school. And they've been talking about budget cuts and cutting drama from the high school. And we were all pretty devastated. And they went as far as to give six of the teachers at the high school pink slips that were not, you are fired, but they are, look at other jobs because you might not be invited back next year. And our drama teacher got one of them. And they said that they were going to cut drama, which is crazy because they just built this beautiful theater for them like 3 years ago. And so they did Mamma Mia. They're only the third high school in California to do it, and they crushed it. I mean, killed it. And they said it was the second night, a Friday night, was the biggest crowd they've ever seen in the theater. And yesterday, my daughter went to drama class, and the drama teacher's pink slip was revoked. And
that's
we think it was because of the crowd that they brought in and the money that they brought in.
That is great.
That's awesome. Really cool.
I'm going to jump on your bandwagon. I just closed a show too at the high school. So we just did Rock of Ages, and we have this tradition that when we close a show, we do a ghost light ceremony. So it's sort of all the lights are off in the house and there's one light on stage, and it sort of gives the kids an opportunity to say goodbye to the show and say the things they need to say and stuff. And then we, you know, we take the whole set down and everything's completely empty. And then we have the ceremony. So, it gets real emotional because for a lot of these kids, and we, theater at that school is sort of the cool thing to do because the program's really good. So we get a lot of kids from the football team or that are cheerleaders or that, you know, do different sports. And to the amount of kids that we get up there, I get a stipend, and I can tell you wholeheartedly that I do this for this moment right there, where the number, and not for the money, because the number of kids that go up there and say, I've never had a place where I feel like I belong, or my home life is really messed up. And one of the kids thanked the director for setting such a good example for how much he loves his wife, because he doesn't see that at home. We had one student come out as trans. We've had students come out as gay. We've had and say that this is the first place they feel accepted and the first place they feel like they can be themselves, and how they're dealing with depression or anxiety, and being able to have a place where they feel confident and they can do something that they feel proud of. That right there is why we, you know, do it. I don't think what I get paid in a stipend covers my gas getting to rehearsals for, you know, for 7 months or however long we're working on this show, but that sort of moment. And it was nice because it was harder music. We had a couple former students that graduated 2 or 3 years ago come back and play in the, it was a like 5-piece rock band. And one of them got up there and said that he was very, very close to, you know, attempting suicide, and how, you know, his sort of advice to them hearing all these things about, you know, dealing with depression, anxiety is just go out and do as much good as you possibly can in the world with the limited amount of time you have on it. And to hear him come back and say, it was just, it, that's why I do this right there, to hear these kids, I mean, these senior football players up there in tears because they've never had a place where they felt so accepted. Like that's why you do this.
That's really cool.
Magic. You know, the girl that's a junior that's crying because her senior sister with special needs, this is the first place that she's ever felt like, you know, her sister has a place where she can go and people are going to help her out and take care of her and stuff. Like that's, you know, that's why they do it.
So I stop really cutting drama from school, you dumb dums.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I probably am talking too much, but I have a friend whose daughter was just in a show at the other high school in town, and she got in trouble because she said to one of her teachers, like, hey, you know, this academy that we're in, you know, we're all in this show right now. And so can you lay off on the homework a little bit? Because, you know, we're all getting home at like 11 o'clock at night. And for the next 5 days, can you just give us a little bit of a break? And he kind of gave her the like, well, school should be the most important thing and blah, blah, blah. You know, your homework's important. And she said, yeah, I get it. But like, what you don't understand is that for a lot of these kids that are in this show, that's being in this program is the only reason they're alive right now. So if you could just back off a little bit, that'd be great. And of course, she got in trouble for saying that to her teacher, but her mom's a teacher too. And so she was like, yeah, no, I'm totally cool with it because you're right. Because if it weren't for this program, not for you, but for some of these other kids, they probably wouldn't be alive today. So yeah, he should back off, give a little less homework, and let you guys get some fucking sleep.
Life's more important than standardized test scores.
Yes.
Being well-rounded is more important. Mm. Yep. I'm obsessed with Aunt Becky getting arrested because I think that's hella funny. Well, I don't
even get to talk about
that. I mean, is it any surprise that rich people are buying their kids way into college? No. Is it fair? Of course it's not. But I think it's funny how people are real, and people should be upset, but this is just like a microcosm of the way that super rich people like get an upper hand in society. I'm not mad at them. I think it's interesting that everyone's real upset. Like how the, and I said this on your face, how the fuck do you think George Bush got into Harvard? Come on, bro. Like he made up the word strategery. Get over yourself. Like he did not get on his academic merits. Like Jared Kushner did not go to Harvard for his academic merits. Donald Trump did not go to UPenn because he's such a good businessman. Like but just
Aunt Becky.
I know. Well, I think it's funny that they're, you know, Aunt Becky and, you know, Felicity Huffman are getting the brunt of this, but rich people have been getting away for shit forever. I think it's funny that they're getting called out now. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily understand the outrage because it's kind of like a, well, yeah, of course they paid for their Becky's kids.
Is like almost
and
a
you wasted too, half a mil to get into USC, bro.
Like the funny part is that Felicity Huffman spent like $15,000.
For Lauren USC?
$500,000. And her daughter has like a pretty popular YouTube channel where she talked about not really wanting to go to college and it's not really her thing.
Now, I'm not knocking like, USC, like, cool. No, but if you're going to spend like, that kind of money.
When this news broke, the daughter that they paid all this money, Olivia Jade, to get into USC, she was on the yacht of like the school's board, like president of their board of directors, like on his yacht.
The amount of shit like, that rich people get away with, this is not on the top of my list of like burning hell. Like it's just, it's not.
I laughed so hard. I sent you guys that meme that said, did you ever flex on rich people by only paying the $80 application fee to get into USC?
Yeah. It's, So that's, I think it's a nice reprieve from my like normal, like, oh, we're all going to die in a fiery, like dumpster fire of global warming and an administration that doesn't give a shit about what happens to us. So this was like a nice little like, no kidding.
Something was up with Aunt Becky. She was too hungry for that spotlight on Wake Up San Francisco.
Yeah. What about
you, Paige?
Oh, I think because I'm here, I'm obsessing about comics right now.
For sure.
I get it.
Yeah. That tracks. All right.
Yeah.
How's everyone's Paige, how's your coffee? You it's awake? Good. You ready to go?
I'm awake. I gotta bail out soon. I gotta go meet some people down the street, but coffee's good so far.
This is where we wrap up. All right. Yep. Stacey, how's your wine?
It's good. I would buy it again.
I'm going to buy mine all the time.
We know. Yeah.
The alcohol content's relatively high because it's,
we can tell. You
know, yeah, we know.
Champagne, and I haven't eaten anything. No, it's cheap. It's good. It's cute. I love it.
Mine does taste like sunshine.
There you have it.
Paige, why don't you tell people where they can find you if they don't know where to look for you yet?
Jane's World is easy to find. I have a blog, PaigeBraddock.com, where you can find all the comic stuff. And then I have a separate website for my alter ego, Missouri Vaughn, just MissouriVaughn.com. And Vaughn is spelled V-A-U-N a little bit differently. I should say, I don't know if you guys know this, but Missouri Vaughn was actually my great-grandmother's actual name.
And really?
Such a good name.
Isn't it a great name?
Yeah. Oh,
she lived on. Writing lesbian novels. She has no idea.
Fantastic. That's great. And where can people find the peanuts?
The peanuts.
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere. I'm just kidding. I'm drunk.
Well, wine must be good.
Great.
Don't make her pitch it more. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And thank you, Paige, and otherwise known as Missouri, for coming on this week. We will be taking next week off because my family's coming into town. But we will be back. We'll let you know on the Facebook page. All right.
It was really fun to talk to you guys. And I hadn't met Stacey and Stacey before, and I'm glad we got the camera set up so I could see what you look like.
Yeah, me too.
It's so much better.
We appreciate having you on, really.
Yeah, that's a lot, Jack.
Thank you.
Okay, all we'll right. talk to you all Bye, later. Guys. Have a good weekend.
Have a Bye. Good night.
Bye. Bye.